PCs need to be cleaned before updates are applied. So, since that's the hottest topic for today's show, I'm going to start with that topic. Now, what happened was earlier in the week was Patch Tuesday. And as you all know, Patch Tuesday happens the second Tuesday of every month, and Patch Tuesday is where Microsoft updates come out, as well as updates for Adobe products and Java, and really there's a lot of software vendors that are sending out updates on Patch Tuesday. And so what almost all the IT people out there do is they apply these patches in a granular format in an environment that's highly controlled. But for you at home, and for a lot of small businesses, these patches just automatically apply at sometime between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., literally every night when the computer is on. And so normally I would. I mean, I'd say that Microsoft updates are very, very, very reliable. All the operating systems since Windows Vista have been pretty stable. Windows 7 is obviously more stable than Vista, and Windows 8's even more stable than Windows 7. So, while the operating systems are getting better, we still have some of the older operating systems out there. And what I found was that out of the systems that I manage, 4 computers, which is a pretty high percentage, very, very unexpected to have that number of computers that actually had the same problem. They had received Microsoft updates and had self-applied and had rebooted and had come back up in a state where they were saying that they were rolling back the updates because the updates had failed, and therefore do not turn off your computer. And in all of those cases, I had recommended to the user of the computer to just let the process go and then see if that would bring the computer back up. And it did. Now, the day after that, though, 2 of the 4 computers encountered the same problem again. So the rollback was working, at least to the extent of getting the computer back up and running. But then there was some sort of other fundamental underlying issue that needed to be corrected. So I started to work through this, and in looking at the event logs, I was finding that there was a number of updates that were failing. It wasn't just one bad update, at least that's what it seemed like. So sometimes these issues are very, very difficult to troubleshoot, and you can't just take a perspective that says, well, all the updates, they're bad, or this one update is bad, or something like that. Maybe it was really the confluence of events where the update wasn't bad, it was that the computer itself was having a challenge with either the Microsoft update component on it, or maybe having too many temporary files that need to be cleaned up or something like that. So I went through this process of vetting out a process that would work to isolate the issues or just straight up fix it. So I'll give you some tips on what I did for these computers that fixed them. And first thing I did was run the desktop cleanup wizard as an administrative account. Now, when you run that as an administrative account, I'm sorry, not the desktop cleanup wizard, the disk cleanup wizard. The desktop cleanup wizard is evil. Don't use it. Okay. But the disk cleanup wizard is not evil. It's actually a very good tool. And so generally, when you run that as an admin account, you can pretty safely just check all the boxes and say, go ahead and delete all this temporary stuff. And this is a good thing to do maybe twice a year anyways. And so I did that. Then, if you go into the control panel, under troubleshooting, there's an option in the control panel called troubleshooting. There's then an option called run maintenance tasks. And it's useful to do that just to see if the maintenance task checker finds any issues that it can action. No harm in trying that. So I did that. And then I also utilized in the control panel, there is a Windows Update Repair option. So I did that as well. And then rebooted. And then decided to try to install the Microsoft updates that were outstanding, doing them one at a time. Now, what I observed was that I think that the main core issue was that there was really actually something wrong with Windows Update on that computer. And so by doing all of that disk cleanup and running the maintenance tasks and then doing the Windows Update repair, what it really forced it to do was that if the patch, if either Windows Update had a bug or something in it that needed to be fixed, or if one of the patches that had downloaded did not download clean, and maybe that was actually what was causing the problem. Anyways, Windows Update Repair will fix that, because what it does, it goes in and resets everything. So it cleans out the temp stuff, and of course you have to do Disk Cleanup Wizard first, but it then resets everything. So what I actually observed was that after having done that and a couple of reboots, seeing that the computer detected that it did not have those updates that it needed in a pre-downloaded state. So it then went out and got a new copy of those updates. And then deciding to do the updates one at a time with a reboot in between, it totally fixed the issue. Now, the other commonality that I've seen here is that this has only affected Windows 7 computers. So if you do happen to have Windows 7 still and you are thinking about upgrading to Windows 10, I would definitely recommend you do that. But you need to do that really thoughtfully, meaning that I'm sure your computer is something that you care about. So what you definitely want to do is have a full backup of all your data files first. And it would also be prudent to do a Windows image backup of your computer. So if you don't know how to do those things, then you should probably get some assistance. And as always, you can contact me through the website, qualityplusconsulting.com, if you need any of those sorts of consulting services. But Windows 10 is great. I mean, as far as an operating system, it seems to be very, very, very stable and reliable at this point. I haven't had any issues with it, and I have a number of clients who are using it. You do need to be cognizant of the fact that not all of the old software that you have on your computer will be compatible with it, so you need to check on those sorts of things before you decide to do the upgrade. And I personally don't recommend the strategy of the possible Russian roulette approach of just saying, yeah, what the heck, everything will be just fine, so go ahead and do Windows 10 upgrade with no backups of your data and no Windows image backup. No, I definitely do not suggest that approach. Okay, so let's move on to the next topic. There are a number of security researchers that are talking about how in 2016 they expect a massive increase in malvertisements, like 300% increase. And so I've talked about this a lot before, but I think a lot of people just are still kind of not understanding why advertisements must be blocked. And you're not understanding how that stuff is getting in or why deep packet inspection must be employed. So given the fact that malvertisements are, by pretty much all of the security researchers out there, being perceived to be the primary attack vector for 2016, then I feel it prudent to discuss this some more. And some of the new analysis is talking about how criminals have paid for advertising services, and I have actually talked about that, I'd say, a few shows ago. So if you want to hear more about that particular thing, I've got some specific examples and statistics. You can go check out some prior shows on that. But criminals are paying for advertising services in order to sneak malicious code into legitimate websites. And of course, there's all these legitimate websites that are using things like Google Ad services. So if the criminal is actually paying for Google Ad services, and they're using that to distribute their malicious code, well, it's getting, you know, delivered right to your browser, And unless you're using deep packet inspection with multiple levels of security, one of which has to be a full security suite perimeter security appliance that is actually properly programmed, which is a rarity. Okay, it is a rarity. I know this because earlier this week I talked to a gentleman who manages over 400 perimeter security appliances for a company, and that company that hires him to do that does not, well, they're supposed to be protecting HIPAA environments, but that company has no desire to actually implement network layer security for HIPAA compliance on those networks. And this is the kind of scary stuff that those of us with a conscience in the IT community have to deal with, is this struggle of dealing with unethical practitioners. And when I say unethical practitioners, I mean that, let's say you take a bunch of dentists, and those dentists, they don't know all about the IT stuff, so they go and they hire a large company, typically, in many cases, their practice management software company, and that company is saying, oh, sure, we do managed services and we can take care of this and that for you, and it's this, monthly fee and so forth. So the dentist is thinking that they're doing the right thing. They think they're doing the due diligence of hiring a professional managed services company to manage things. Except in the, I mean, I'd say in 95% of cases, I mean, it's disgustingly high, the percentage of these sorts of situations where those companies should not even be in the managed services business because they do not have a single security architect on staff. I mean, they're just so grossly incompetent, it's off the charts. Anyway, so here's the dentist doing what they think they should be doing, which is hiring a practitioner that supposedly supposed to know what they're doing, but then the IT consulting services practitioner really truly has no idea what they're doing. And so the dentist has done what they're supposed to do, but the practitioner has not done what they're supposed to do. And who is the victim in all of this? Well, of course, it's the patients. It's always the patients. It's always the consumers that are the primary victims, because it is the medical identity, the protected health information, the personally identifiable information that ends up getting leaked. And once that stuff's out there in the world, it's almost impossible to get it back in terms of just, I mean, what, are you going to die and you're going to get a new identity and a new social security number and a new birth certificate, and everything else? I mean, how do you get new stuff? I mean, this isn't the same as just getting a new credit card number. No, that's your identity. And once it's out there in the hacker community, it being sold on the dark web, then that's where it is. And medical insurance fraud, utilizing your personal health information, is a giant, giant problem, and it's very lucrative. So, anyways, I have a personal problem with these consulting services practitioners that really should not be in the business. And they, through the lack of having a security architect on staff, they fail to have the intestinal fortitude, knowledge, and courage to actually implement things like deep packet inspection. And DPI is absolutely crucial, because when we look at this largest attack vector that's out there, which is the malvertisements, then you have to deal with that threat. So how do you deal with that threat? Well, you have to have, of course, layered defense, and you have to have cybersecurity kill chain. But of course, as part of that, you have to have deep packet inspection, because what the criminals are doing is they're paying for advertising services so that their malware content will be distributed through legitimate advertising networks, and they're coupling it with attacks over HTTPS. In a lot of cases, they're encoding their malicious JavaScript inside of like Shockwave video files. So, well, now you have to have comprehensive patch management solutions, which I'm going to be very blunt. The vast majority of IT consulting firms do not do comprehensive patch management in a timely fashion. And I think it is ethically problematic. I have a major issue with that. I think that it is their due diligence that is required to deploy those patches to the endpoints that people are paying them to manage within 48 hours of that patch's release. I mean, I understand if the computer's offline, it's offline, but then schedule it so that when the computer comes up online, it's going to get those patches. So there's already been this time lapse between the time that the hackers figured out about this breach and then when the software vendor figures out about it, and then they start writing a patch, and then they test a patch and all that, and finally it gets released. Well, you can't sit around on your hands playing patty cake, waiting even more to deploy that to the systems. You need to get off your duff and get those patches deployed to the systems. And there are systems management platforms out there. They've been in the IT community since at least the year 2000. So, I mean, we're talking about having 16 years of history of systems management platforms. For people to not have a systems management platform now is just completely grossly unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. So, now if you're not willing to pay for it, then, well, then there it is. It's not your, then as a consumer, if you're not willing to pay for patch management services, then you really need to get very serious about getting trained so that you can close that patch window yourself. Otherwise, hire somebody to do that patch management for you. So, part of that, though, this entire strategy is okay, do your patches, and you have to have deep packet inspection. You have to block the advertisements. You have to block them at many levels. But if this is the largest attack vector that's out there, then you've really got to have a comprehensive strategy for dealing with that. Okay, so let's talk about Android malware. And there's some really bad stuff going on out there. I'm going to include a link to this on the podcast site for this particular podcast so that you can see the article yourself if you want. And it is about auto-rooting Android malware. And that auto-rooting Android malware turns out to be nearly impossible to remove. It's so bad that if you flash the OS partition on the Android device, then the recovery partition is still there. This auto-rooting Android malware is so bad that it will actually hack the recovery partition so that when you reflash the OS partition, it'll reinstall itself. So, I mean, a lot of people just do not have the technical savvy to deal with this, so they're just going and getting new phones. Now, my approach in all of this is don't use Android. And I just don't think that phones provided by the cell phone providers have Android operating systems that are being managed appropriately. Now, if you go out and get Black Phone, sure, that's a different story because the Black Phone people are completely committed to keeping that operating system updated and patched. But now, one interesting tidbit about the avoidance of this auto-rooting Android malware is it seems that the commonality of the attack vector was people who had downloaded stuff from places other than the official Play Store. So, I mean, that by itself, sticking with the Play Store is not going to make you 100% safe from this. What you really need to have is, again, a full security strategy for your mobile device as well. And I just don't really agree with these people that are doing so much sensitive things on their Android devices, and then they're not even running security software on their Android devices. I mean, you really can't look at some sort of a mobile device that you're connecting to just, wireless networks round and about and playing games on it and installing stuff on this thing as some sort of a secure device. If you're doing your banking on that at the same time, I mean, that's a little bit crazy. And the reason I say that is because other security researchers have done a lot of extensive testing into all of the popular mobile banking apps that are out there, and found that they're all riddled with flaws. But of course, if your phone has actually been rooted, well then, everything on that phone is compromised. So, you really just got to ask the question: do you really need the hassle? Maybe you should just like do your online banking when you get back home on your home computer. But of course, I'm assuming that you don't play games on your home computer either, and your home computer is actually secured. So, some of these security researchers that were looking into this, they ran into some really interesting things. They said, at first we wondered why someone would infect an enterprise two-factor authentication app in order to serve ads. And because that was the only way that the user would actually see anything happening with this Android malware. And it was like, well, why was this the enterprise two-factor authentication app serving advertisements? I mean, why would that even happen? The whole point of a two-factor authentication app is the increase of security. I am not even aware of any two-factor authentication application that is going to present ads. So if you do see one that starts serving ads, then you can be pretty well guaranteed that your phone is compromised. And of course, then the researchers said, well, then we realized that this was an opportunity to harvest and exfiltrate all the users' credentials, So that was rather interesting. I also wanted to let you know that the Cyber Security Internet Security Act, CISA, it's called actually the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, it was passed. And it was passed with all of the privacy invasive features fully intact. This passing of this bill will do nothing to increase the security of any of us. It will not stop cyber attacks. It will not decrease cyber attacks. And it will basically just give every company out there that is collecting information on you a free pass to spy on everything that you do and report it to the government, which is, of course, a full violation of privacy laws. And Robin Green, the policy counsel for the Open Technology Institute, said, "Every law is struck down for the purposes of this information sharing. Financial privacy, electronic communications privacy, health privacy, none of it matters anymore. This is a dangerous road to go down." So I wanted to let you all know that, yep, privacy is officially dead now, because when a private organization no longer has to comply with all of the privacy laws that were on the books, and instead they are going to be punished by the government for not spying on you and turning over all that data to the government, well then of course what are they going to do? They don't want to be paying millions of dollars in fines, so of course they're going to collect the data. So now what you're looking at is organizations have to just not collect the data. Well, but they're going to, because they already have been. It is almost impossible to find somebody with the ethics of for example, the gentleman who owns Silent Circle. Silent Circle was doing email services at one point in time, and when he was provided a subpoena to fork up all of the email of all the people that had Silent Circle accounts, he just terminated the Silent Circle service and said, "Well, I've whacked it. It's all gone. I don't have Silent Circle email anymore, so there's nothing to subpoena. There you go. It's all gone." Basically, I'd say almost nobody's going to do that. Do you think Google is going to do that? Do you think Yahoo or Microsoft or Apple are going to do that? No, they're not going to just shut down the service. So what are they going to do? Well, they might make a bit of a fuss, but then in the end of the day, they're going to turn over all your data to the government. So I just wanted to let you all know that pretty much this is the day that security died, is when CISA was passed. And Forrester has a research group. They're called Forrester Research Group, and they put together a really excellent report on the Office of Personnel Management breach. And I thought it was fascinating. I am going to link a marked up PDF with this podcast so that you can download that and read it. And it had some pretty hard-hitting points in it. It was not the typical run-of-the-mill thing. I'd say this was right on par with the quality level of the annual Verizon breach report. So I wanted to share some highlights with you with regards to this. Some of them are going to be straightforward and consistent with what you know, and then others are going to be like, "Ooh, you're going to be thinking, ooh, I should go get that report and download it." So the Forrester team looked at the OPM breach and they said, let's all get real here. What are the actionable steps that can be done to substantially improve security in order to avoid a situation like this happening again? So one of their recommendations was to build out a privileged identity management strategy because 70 to 80% of all data breaches are involving the use of privileged and administrative passwords and credentials. And I could not agree more. And by the way, if you are utilizing the IT services of any company, I strongly recommend that you ask them what level of security they are using in order to protect the use of the privileged and administrative passwords and credentials for your environment. And I think that's a very, very crucial question to ask because I would say the vast majority of IT consulting firms that are out there, they really suck at that. I'm just going to be blunt. They oftentimes, I find, are sharing your passwords with your environment for your environment with entirely too many people. There isn't adequate tracking. They're not using two-factor authentication. The passwords are stored in cleared text. It's just pretty atrocious. I'm disgusted, frankly, by a lot of the unethical behavior that I find in the IT consulting industry. And the only way that that's ever going to change is if the consumers of those services get to be more educated and demand higher quality service. So back to the Forrester report recommendations, they also recommended the use of solutions to detect behavior anomalies. Now, I think this is phenomenal. And Microsoft has a new solution that I'm going to be testing. There are, of course, solutions that are out on the market by other companies. Those are listed in the Forrester report if you're interested in that. But I'm going to test this new Microsoft solution and see what that is. I have a feeling that it's going to be highly effective and quite accessible to any organization that has Active Directory. Then the Forrester team talks a lot about using encryption wherever possible, and they actually refer to it as a thing that can cover up a lot of mistakes. And I totally agree. It's a wonderful assessment in that if you can be using encryption, then you really need to be asking yourself the question, why aren't you using encryption for that? And all of that is applicable to anybody with even a home computer. If you can be using BitLocker, well, why aren't you using BitLocker? If you can be using an encrypted password safe, why aren't you using it? If you can be using two-factor authentication with your Amazon account or your Microsoft account or your Google or Apple account, then why aren't you? Turn on the security. So I'm going to list out the full, high-level overview in the attached article with this podcast, so do check that out. But we're out of time today. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside. Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education